Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is poet Joyce Holmes McAllister. Holmes McAllister is a graduate of Ithaca College, where she majored in drama. She began writing poetry in secondary school and was first published by a national literary journal when she was in high school. Her work has appeared in several publications through the years, including the Healing Muse Literary Journal and the Comstock Review. At age 85, Joyce Holmes McAllister had her first poetry chapbook published last month. It's called Before We Knew, and it was published by Foothills Publications. And welcome to the show, Joyce.
Thank you.
Now, I want you to tell the story of how your mother unwittingly introduced you to poetry one day when you were homesick from school. Tell us that story.
Well, it starts, I wasn't really sick, but I had to take a test in the multiplication tables. I was in third grade, and there was no way I was going to take that test, and so I pretended that I was sick. And my mother was a school teacher, but she fell for it. She kept me in bed, and she was feeling sorry for me, so she brought me two books of poetry called Poems Teachers Ask For. And I opened one of them up, and I just fell in love, because I never knew that lines could rhyme and that lines could have rhythm, and I was hooked.
God, that's an amazing story. I love that. Your mother created a monster, right?
Right.
Now, you also have talked about how your first few years of school were spent in a one-room schoolhouse.
That's true.
Where you also got introduced to poetry. So tell us about that.
Well, you know, I think back then, I don't know what they do now, but it was not unusual to have poetry introduced in second, third, fourth grade. And, of course, the other thing you have to remember is that in a one-room schoolhouse, there were at least six grades.
Mm.
And so whatever the teacher was teaching or whatever she was saying was heard by everybody, irrespective if you were in second grade or sixth grade. So that, I think, is part of how I don't remember what grade I was in or if I was listening to, you know, to the teacher talk to the sixth graders or the fifth graders or what have you. But we were certainly introduced to poetry, and actually we had to memorize.
You know, I was going to bring that up. That seems like a lost art to me. That was so important for kids to learn how to verbalize and actually, you know, speak with some expression, right?
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
So do you remember when you attempted to start writing poetry?
I remember my father being very frightened because I had written what I thought was a poem. And I must have been about third grade again. And he was over across the creek chopping bushes down or something. And I was so excited. I started right across the creek, and I could hear him hollering at me, go back, go back. But I just kept heading toward him because I had to show him the poem. And when he started chastising me, I said, "But Dad, it's a poem." And he, of course, was trying to look out for my life, but I wasn't impressed.
Did you remember what the poem was about? Was it just like three lines or something?
I have no idea. I mean, you know, that I was 9 or 10 years old, and I'm sure it was terrible. I mean, I'm sure it had no resemblance to a poem, but it did to me.
God, that's
at that point.
What a wonderful spark, though, that you found, that you were so excited that your father thought your life was in peril.
That's right.
That's called real devotion to poetry, right?
That's right.
Now, let's discuss the fact that you've just recently had this first collection of poetry published. What an amazing milestone to have it published at 85. How did you put this book together? There's only 25 poems in it. You must have a room full of work.
I do. I've written basically all of my life. I wrote in grade school, I wrote in high school, I wrote in college, and I wrote all during the rest of my life when I was working in New York City, when I was working here. I never stopped writing. The only problem was that sometimes the job was so demanding that I didn't have as much time as I wanted to. And I was always looking forward to retirement because then I said, I'll really be able to devote more time. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
The minute I retired, I gave myself time to catch my breath. And then I was upstairs with my computer and me. And I was writing.
And you gave yourself permission to write full time. Do you remember when you first dared to try to show it to the public or read out loud or send it to a publication? Or was that a hard road for you?
Well, actually, that happened not through my doing. When I was a senior in high school, the English, because I was writing all the time, and my English teacher was the one that sent a couple of three of my poems into this national publication that was going to publish high school seniors. And she told me what she was going to do, and I didn't think anything of it. And it just turned out that they published one of my poems, and of course I was thrilled.
It must have been total validation.
Well, I was just thrilled because I was reading a lot of poetry, and it felt very good. But I went on writing. I mean, it wasn't the end. Uh-huh. But I never did much to get published. I really didn't. I should have worked harder at it.
Did you know why you didn't? Were you just too busy writing to even pay attention to that?
I don't think I really knew the mechanics. I knew you had to kind of be your own secretary. I wasn't kind of willing to do that. But I will tell you, after I got through college and was living in Buffalo for a short time, I sent a couple of poems into the New Yorker, which is one of the hardest markets
to
be published in. And I got a letter back and said they could not publish the poem in particular that I had sent, but that to please send them some others.
Wow.
And I was so, let's say, ignorant or oblivious or whatever you want to call it. I never sent them another poem.
Oh, well, that is validation, too. Everybody was encouraging you, Joyce.
I guess so, but I wasn't listening, was I?
Now, I want to have you read a poem from your new collection. The collection's called Before We Knew, and this poem is called In a Farm Kitchen, 1940. Tell us a little bit about it, and then I'll have you read it.
Well, actually, that was my first introduction to my second husband. Through my aunt, who was a neighbor of his mother, he came out to our farm. And he spent, I think it was either a week or 2 weeks. All I remember is I was playing with Gone with the Wind paper dolls. So that gives you the era. And I really thought, despite the kind of romantic things that are in the poem of the garden and the this and that, I thought he was a terrible little boy. But I met him again 25, 26, 27 years later. And I recognized the name. And I called my mother and I said, Mom, what was the name of that terrible little boy that came and stayed with us? And indeed, it was the terrible little boy, and I ended up marrying him.
Wow. Well, let's have you read In a Farm Kitchen, 1940.
In a Farm Kitchen, 1940. We met eating corn on the cob, dripping with butter, in a farm kitchen in 1940. You were 8 and I was 9. Just outside, scarlet red tomatoes hung heavy on the vine, waiting for some grains of salt. cucumbers hid under sprawling leaves, crisp inside with knobby skins, while raw green beans snapped against the tooth and deep red radishes stung the tongue. When you were done with life for good, you left in mid-season, the harvest only half finished, weeks of ripe corn still uneaten, the garden laden, waiting.
You know, I find that a really touching poem myself. You know, it's full of nostalgia. Tell us a little bit about how you felt about growing up on a farm.
I can tell you how I feel now. I feel very privileged.
Mm.
I don't think there are many of us left that really grew up on what was known as a dairy farm, with only 40 or 50 head of cattle. Now farms are made up of thousands of heads of cattle,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and it's not the same life. Most people in those days, there were families that owned a farm, and it was a wonderful life. We had two gardens. My mother, and so did I when I was old enough, canned or froze vegetables and fruits. My father used to say, no matter what happened, we were never going to starve to death.
Mm-hmm.
And that was true. There were a lot of advantages. The other side of it was that I always longed to get out in what I considered the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Because there does have a certain isolation to it. And I wanted to go someplace else. I always wanted to explore.
Did you have that fantasy of going to the big city and becoming a writer and that whole fantasy that people had, you know?
Oh, did I? But I was going to go to the big city and become an actress. And I was going to take Broadway by storm. And either that or I was going to go to Hollywood and make like $5,000 a week, and my parents would never have to work for the rest of their lives.
Uh-huh.
So, but my first love when I was drama. By the time I got to college, I was torn of whether I should stay a drama major or whether I should go into writing or journalism. I stuck with drama probably because I was in Ithaca College, and it was, you know, I don't even know if I could have transferred the credit I had back then into a journalism major.
Mm.
And I didn't know where to go, and certainly Ithaca College didn't offer journalism.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Joyce Holmes McAllister. She's a poet, and we're talking about her first collection of poetry called Before We Knew. Now, I want to ask you this just as a writer. Do you think many poets write in order to make sense of the past? Because a lot of your writing, obviously, is about the past, and I don't know too many writers who write about the future, right?
Right.
So do you feel like you're continuously trying to make sense of the past or just your life?
You know, I do think it's trying to make sense of the past, but I also think it's a kind of therapy. I wouldn't want to live without being able to write poetry,
mm.
because that's an expression of how I really feel. And you don't come out and say some of the intimate things that you can say in poetry to just anybody,
mm-hmm.
but you can write it on a page and make it a poem, and then you can share it with other people. And I'm in a writing group, and that is what we do. That's what's part of writing poetry and sharing, is it's, you get into some real feelings that you wouldn't talk about in casual conversation.
Yeah, yeah. And it is a way to turn pain into something beautiful, too, in many ways.
That's right.
And to make it more, you know, palatable for people to listen to your...
That's right.
Instead of just, you know, bitching about things all the time.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I wanted to have you read another poem from Before We Knew. This one's called Renovation, and I know this appeared in the Healing Muse Literary Journal. So tell us a little bit about it, and then we'll listen to you read it.
Well, it's a humorous poem. I've written a lot of humorous poetry. Some of it rhymed, some of it unrhymed. This happens to be unrhymed. And it was just an idea that came to me one day about somebody falling apart, probably me. And so I wrote this crazy poem, and it amused me.
Yeah.
And so I guess it amused a few people because I was very happy it was accepted by the Healing Muse. And I've read it a number of times in public. So,
yeah, it's definitely a very funny poem. And okay, let's listen to you to read Renovation.
Renovation. I longed for a renovation. You know what I mean. A makeover. An entirely new self. I wanted to dump the old me, be shiny again. I called an expert in the Yellow Pages. He promised his work was guaranteed for eternity and beyond. Upon arrival, he removed my first rusted screw. I started to shake. Cave in, then my whole self fell apart. He was stunned, packed up his toolbox, prepared to leave. Don't go, I cried. I'm still in pieces. Nobody, he said, is held together with just one screw.
It is definitely a funny poem. Very cleverly done, you know, in regard to trying to build something. I can imagine you probably couldn't have written that as a really young woman, right?
No. I can't imagine that I would have.
Yeah, yeah. And you found humor in it, too, which is remarkable, too.
I
love it for that reason.
I guess so.
Now, to tell us about the title of this chapbook, Before We Knew. What does it refer to?
Well, actually, the title is from a poem that's in a collection originally called My New York Collection of Poems. And they were all about New York City and the time I spent there. And that particular poem is, I like it, and it kind of covers a broad territory. I think it fits all of the different kinds of things that are in the chapbook, the different kinds of life experiences, because in a sense, all of them were before we knew, because it's not about the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess just because I liked the poem and it seemed to fit, is where the title came from.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, a lot of your poems are about some of the innocence of youth and so on. What was it like for you and your family to go through World War II?
Oh, that I remember very well. It was scary. My mother became aware, and it's quite amazing to me, by 1941, she was telling us and having us read things that were in magazines like the Reader's Digest.
Mm.
That, believe it or not, they were telling some of the things that were happening in Germany. And as a child, I was appalled. And then, of course, Pearl Harbor came, and we really became aware of how vulnerable this country was.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through the war. I was knitting little squares for Afghans.
Mm.
We didn't have sugar, of course, which was no big deal. But I learned to bake cakes, because I did a lot of cooking as a child, and stuff with Carol syrup.
Mm-hmm.
And we were limited on different things that we could have to cook with. But it was good. It was good in that way, in that you felt you were doing something to help your country.
Yeah.
Where you really couldn't do much. You couldn't go fight in battles. You didn't want to. But you could at least help in that way.
Yeah. Were you writing during that time? Or were materials scarce? Obviously, you had to use pencils and paper.
Yeah, I was writing. But I don't know if I wrote much about the war. And if I did, I don't have it.
Mm.
I mean, I have a lot of my writing from high school. But I don't have things I kept very much before that.
Yeah, well, it was a scary time. I think a lot of people were trying to keep their minds away from the whole thought of the war. I mean, even when you go to the Anne Frank House in Amsterdam, she has pictures of movie stars on the wall, even though, you know, obviously they were in total peril. But, you know, people go into their worlds in order to survive, right?
Right, and it was an experience, mm-hmm. to feel how vulnerable this country was, but also how frightening some of the rest of the world could be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm so glad you kept writing. Which poets have you gone back to again and again for inspiration and so on during your life? Can you tell us? I've never think I heard you talk about that.
What poets?
Which poets have influenced you, and which poets have you gone back to for inspiration?
You wouldn't believe it. When I was younger, in high school, even junior high, I was deeply into romantic poets, women romantic poets, such as Edna St. Vincent Millay, Sarah Teasdale.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was overcome with their passion. And then as I got older, T.S. Eliot. I became involved with T.S. Eliot for a while, for quite a long time. And I think when I pick up a book of poetry, I don't know, there's something that I relate to right away.
Mm.
Or maybe I don't. And so that's where I make choices of who I keep reading.
Mm.
And I don't think every poet has to appeal to every reader of poetry.
Oh, right.
You know, any more than every piece of music has to appeal to every person or every musician.
Mm-hmm.
So I discover poets all the time. And then sometimes I forget their names because, of course, that's how old I am. But anyway.
To tell us how you approach poetry in writing, though. Did lines come to you? Are you always carrying a tablet around with you so that you can write on
it? No, I did.
How do you write?
Lines come into my head.
Mm.
I may be peeling potatoes at the kitchen sink or just making a bed.
Mm.
Any mundane task you can think of, and suddenly a line will pop in my head.
And are you somebody who has to quickly write it down? So many poets have said, I've got to do it immediately.
I try to, because it really usually does go away,
mm-hmm.
no matter how hard you try. In fact, I just wrote a poem recently about waking up in the middle of the night, which a lot of poets do.
Yes.
And you have a line come. And you think, oh, I don't want to turn on the light and write that down. And, of course, then by morning, it's gone.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
You really turn
to
on
the vapor
that light.
That it came in on. Yeah, that's true. I know you've lost a lot of your vision in the last few years. Has that affected you as a writer? Has it changed?
It's frustrated me.
Has it?
Yeah. Well, number one, I love to read poetry. And I mean, not just for me to sit with a book and read it, but I love to read it to an audience. Mm. And I used to do a lot of that. And there was a wonderful combination of my dramatic training and the writing. And it was just so much fun.
But you're still doing it. I mean, the evidence is the two poems that you just read for us. It's you read beautifully still.
I'm still doing it, but it becomes very, very difficult. Mm. More and more difficult.
Has it changed the way you approach even the writing, not just the reading out loud?
Well, I don't think so. The one thing that has happened, when I go to the poetry group that I belong to now, actually, I'm the hostess, so I don't go to it. I stay home and they come to me. But anyway, I can't read my own poems anymore. I take them, I make them as big as I can, usually on the computer. But I sometimes don't even have time to make them big enough so that I can read them easily. So someone else usually reads them. And we have another poet in the group whose sight is much worse than mine.
Wow.
And she definitely always has people read her poetry.
So do you need people to read your poetry in order to know whether you've written it the way you want it to sound?
No.
Ah, okay.
No. I thank God for the computer because I can make things big enough in my word processing system that when I'm writing, I can see them, see what I'm writing. And I also, same with email, I have a computer man that really helps me make my emails big enough so I can read them.
So you're still in the game, just like the rest of us. Joyce, we are almost out of time. Can you give a little bit of advice to writers who might be out there writing? I mean, my idea is never give up. You got your poetry book published at the age of 85. It's absolute stunningly beautiful story.
Well, if I had any advice for anyone that thinks they're interested in pursuing a writing career, sit on your chair and do it. You know, don't dream about it, because writing really is work, and you can't just think about it. Mm-hmm. You've got to do it, and the more you do it, the better you get. And it's such a satisfying craft. I recommend it to anybody.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Joyce Holmes McAllister, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, Joyce's collection's called Before We Knew. It was published by Foothills Publishers. It's available at the local bookstores. It's available through Foothills. And we thank you so much for joining us. Keep on writing.
Thank you, Dish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.